You're listening to Georgia Public Broadcasting. I'm Ricky Bevington. Tonight, we bring you a special look at Georgians' experience of Hurricane Irma. The storm crossed into South Georgia early Monday with winds of 85 miles per hour, and then came 6 feet of storm surge.
And this house got flooded. The trailer up here got flooded.
More than 7 million people evacuated from communities along Georgia's coast and across the southeast. For some, things then got worse.
My best friend had a medical emergency and went to the hospital.
Still, as people fled, Georgians opened their homes and shelters to families in need, as well as their animals.
Pets become, if you have a heart, a part of your family.
This is Determination After Devastation, stories from Hurricane Irma. Stay tuned. It's been 4 days since the massive storm crossed the entire state from Florida to Tennessee. Since it moved out, about 1 million people have had their power restored by Georgia Power and Georgia Electric Membership Corporation. Both providers say the remaining 100,000 or so homes should have power before the end of this weekend. Most schools are back open, and the dozen or so that are still closed don't have electricity. Some, like the ones in Bibb and Savannah-Chatham counties, will reopen on Monday. Thousands of people are still assessing wind and water damage to their homes and businesses. Around 50,000 claims have come into the Georgia Office of Insurance. According to Deputy Commissioner Jay Florence, fewer than 87,000 people in Georgia are covered for flood damage.
From an insurance perspective, it's going to be a long process for a lot of these people to get back to normal, and we're committed to being there to help the whole time.
On a national level, Moody's Analytics puts the economic cost of Hurricane Irma at between $64 and $92 billion. That makes it one of the most expensive storms in U.S. history. So how did we get here? Let's rewind the clock. Here is Governor Nathan Deal Friday morning when Hurricane Irma was still hundreds of miles away.
This is a rapidly moving hurricane, and the weather and the consequences of that hurricane can change dramatically within a relatively short period of time.
Governor Nathan Deal declares a state of emergency for all 159 Georgia counties, a first for the state. The reason? Irma is so big, the damage would be widespread. The National Guard mobilizes to help with storm recovery. In Macon, all 5,000 hotel rooms are booked 3 days ahead of the storm. Millions of cars jam highways as hotels, shelters, state parks, and even complete strangers prepare to house tens of thousands of evacuees.
There I sit, and I mean, everybody knows about my condition, and they all evacuate, and you're left. That's what happened to me with the Hurricane Matthew last year. Everybody left.
Canned goods, water, clothes, important papers, pictures, whatever I could in a compact car.
Irma ain't playing. She coming through, she tanned it up. She ain't playing. So we evacuated, so we gonna see what happens when we come back.
That was David Pinckney of Brunswick, Cheryl Cardinal of Key Largo, Florida, and Terrell Wright of Savannah. Nearly 200 miles inland, dozens of utility trucks parked behind the Macon Centerplex are starting to roll out. Inside a nearby hotel, families huddle around television screens, watching cable news in the lobby, passing time as Irma puts lives on hold. Away from the lobby in a conference room, 13-year-old Jacob Gemitter has evacuated from Lakeland, Florida. He has one task that cannot wait.
There's something in Florida called the Allstate Band. It's extremely competitive, let alone on this instrument. And for a seventh grader to make it is extremely rare. So I have to practice anywhere and everywhere, basically. What happened was our family had a decision to get out of Florida because of Hurricane Irma, and we ended up in Macon, Georgia. Many conflicts and difficulties were around the way, but we ended up here in this hotel. The gas was interesting. We had to find gas along the way, and since the hurricane came, gas was on a really low shortage. and we couldn't find any really. I tell everyone this story because it's funny, but my brother originally picked up saxophone, and this is when I was in fifth grade, and I was kind of young back then, and I was jealous, and I was like, ooh, I want to play the saxophone too. So I joined saxophone. I just strive to be much better than he ever was, and that's my motivation for this.
Jacob Gemitter, seventh grade saxophonist practicing in Macon to audition for Florida's All-State Band. Jacob is among millions of people who evacuated southeastern states ahead of Irma, and that number does not include their pets. Kayla Simmons hauled three horses from the Georgia coast, nearly 200 miles inland to the Georgia National Fairgrounds in Perry. Then she turned around to get the rest of her animals.
I have the five dogs, four tortoises, five turtles,
Hello.
Macaw, the two ferrets, the two chinchillas, the two cats, whom I'm missing.
For the thousands of pets that evacuated with their owners, shelters are open across the state to keep them safe. GPB's Josephine Bennett visits one in Macon that gives people peace of mind while they ride out this crisis.
All right, Ms. Pelote, we got your baby and we'll see you when you get back, okay?
All right. Marianne Pelote is dropping her Shih Tzu Raven off at the Pet Evacuation Center in Macon. She arrived in the city Thursday morning from Savannah. She says there was never any thought about leaving her dog behind.
Pets become, if you have a heart, a part of your family. And that's one of the things that you will have to take in a disaster or anything. You know, we go on vacations, we take Raven with us. So she's actually a part of the family.
It wasn't always this way for family pets. During Hurricane Katrina, the Louisiana SPCA estimated 100,000 animals were left behind. A poll by the Fritz Institute found 44% of people that did not evacuate did so because they could not bring their animals. That prompted a change in federal law. Now states that wish to receive federal disaster funds must have a plan for pets.
You gotta go back in there, okay?
She's gonna scratch you if you're not careful.
That's good news for Sophia Ussery, who lives on a marina in Bradenton, Florida. She and her three kids are staying with family in Jones County, but her husky, an American ragamuffin cat, are here.
The ability to know that my dog is safe, and then I wasn't sentencing her to death by leaving her in Bradenton and having somewhere safe where she would be well taken care of, absolutely warms my heart so many times I couldn't even tell you.
Her pets are some of the 35 dogs, 17 cats, and three rabbits staying at the shelter run by Macon-Bibb County Animal Welfare. Between shelters, hotels, and those staying with friends and family, Macon is hosting around 10,000 evacuees. All of their animals are welcome here. After a 20-hour car ride from Key Largo, that's a relief for Cheryl Cardinal, who is dropping off Tiger.
How much do you give him at a time?
I usually give him like half a cup. He's 17 years old, and he's had a hard time crammed up in the car. He's not been in any kind of a cage or anything. But I'm not real concerned about him because everyone here seems to be friendly and willing to take care of him while I'm not able to.
The Pet Evacuation Center is expected to remain open through the end of the week. For GPB News, I'm Josephine Bennett in Macon.
And stay tuned for more voices from Hurricane Irma. We join one family as they anxiously return to their home on Tybee Island after the storm.
We've had a lot of trouble getting information, but we did have a neighbor that stayed, and he sent us a couple of pictures, and it looks like we might possibly have flooded.
Our special coverage, Determination After Devastation, Stories from Hurricane Irma, continues after this. You're listening to Georgia Public Broadcasting. I'm Ricky Bevington. Tonight, we're bringing you the voices of people as they experience Hurricane Irma. It's 9 a.m. Monday as the storm churns over middle and south Georgia. Trees are down, power is failing in Macon, and the city is temporarily home to over 10,000, part of what some are already calling the largest hurricane evacuation in the nation's history. People are still waking up in the fellowship hall of Riverside United Methodist Church. Rain lashes the windows.
Ended up here. We were actually headed to Knoxville, and my best friend had a medical emergency and went to the hospital, and she's still in the hospital. Right now, we don't know much. They were running tests, and that's all we know.
No, just go ahead and pray.
And I've got her daughter with me and my two kids. My name's Angela Gwynn. We came from Ocala, Florida.
So what have you heard about Ocala?
The pictures that I've seen online, there's a lot of trees down, a lot of trees down. The fact that the storm was so big and they couldn't decide if it was going to be a Cat 4 when it hit Florida, if it was going to be a Cat 3, if it was going to be a Cat 5, they didn't know. So
just get out.
Yeah.
So what happens if this turns into home for a while she gets better?
We'll have to figure something out. My husband's a truck driver, so hopefully he can help us with money.
Angela Gwynn of Ocala, Florida, riding out Hurricane Irma in a Macon shelter, speaking with GPB's Grant Blankenship. 24 hours pass. Now Tropical Storm Irma churns north and out of the state, leaving more than a million people without power, 100 miles of flooded coastline, trees uprooted, and at least one man dead after he fell from his roof, clearing debris from the storm. People across Georgia are waking up to assess the damage. Millions are anxious to return home, not knowing what they'll find. GPB's Cindy Hill follows the Fusey family as they cross back onto Tybee Island, engulfed in seawater.
It's Tuesday morning. Vibrant blue skies with fluffy white clouds frame the Bull River Bridge to Tybee Island. On the mainland, islanders gather just to the side of the bridge. They compare whatever information they have about what lies on the other side.
Well, you're off the ground, though. We're not.
We're the ones with the mannequin.
Yeah. I think you're okay.
We're not okay.
Nancy Fusey and her husband are anxious to get home.
I got a kayak.
Yeah.
We've had enough adventure for the last couple of days.
This is Tybee's second hurricane in less than a year.
We had evacuated for Matthew, and we had a lot of wind damage. We had trees down. We had the fence down. Our pool was whatever, but no damage inside the house, so we were happy with that. So with this storm coming, we evacuated again. And we've had a lot of trouble getting information, but we did have a neighbor that stayed, and he sent us a couple of pictures, and it looks like we might possibly have flooded. We were relieved last time that the house wasn't damaged, so this time I'm afraid we're going back to some damage, so we're just going to have to wait and see. This is the hardest part.
They've heard that flooding could be significantly worse than it was for Hurricane Matthew. At least for the coast, this was much more a water storm than a wind storm. The Department of Transportation opens the bridge to Tybee just as high tide crests. Crews work to repair power lines as cars stream onto the only road on and off the island. A sailboat that moored in the middle of the two lanes lies on its side in the rising tide of the marshes, waiting for someone to come and right it. On the island, neighbors and some businesses that stayed offer free coffee and water at roadside stands, welcoming evacuees home. Others head out to surf unusually large post-storm waves. Tybee's beach is the other casualty of storm surge. Sand was washed into streets and shoved deep into dunes. Wind sculpted a new beachfront, knocking over lifeguard stands and water hazard signs. Mayor Jason Buelterman says getting the beach and dunes back into shape will be a top priority for the city, but he says he's most concerned about getting the community back on its feet.
You know, you got people who were hit last year who are just now recovering from Matthew, who are now going to be faced with having to do it all over again, just a year later. And then you got people who didn't get hit at all last time that are facing what these folks faced last year. And they're going to learn how difficult it is get their insurance claims paid, make sure the adjuster does his or her job correctly, which is a problem. You know, so it's going to be a long haul.
Nancy Fusey crosses the bridge to Tybee, arriving home to find garden gnomes face down in mud that washed up to the sandbags piled at her front door. The main floor of her house is dry, and there's only minor flooding in their sunken den, garage, and yard.
These two really came close. People rarely got back on their feet from Matthew, and here's Irma. And then we got Jose out there, and it does give you pause. Now might be a good time to move inland.
For GPB News, I'm Cindy Hill in Savannah.
About an hour and a half south of Savannah, I'm Emily Jones. The day after Hurricane Irma is sunny and warm, normally the perfect time to be on St. Simon's Island. But the picturesque roads are carpeted in leaves, sticks, and other debris left by the storm. Ivan Figueroa makes the rounds, checking on the houses of friends and neighbors who evacuated. He calls one friend from her backyard.
Hey, Diane, it's Ivan.
Hey.
I'm over here at your house.
Yeah.
No trees down, just debris. Seems like less debris than with Matthew. And, you know, those...
After she evacuated to Albany, Susan Hill got similar news from her neighbors about her house in the tiny waterfront city of St. Mary's in Camden County. Her neighbors say that from the outside, her house looks fine, but she's worried about damage they can't see.
I don't know what I'm going to be walking into. We have friends that walked in after being evacuated for a few days, and they walked into their bathrooms, and sewage had backed up into tubs and into toilets and onto floors. And that's bad. That's gross. It's horrible.
Those who stayed through the storm are already dealing with the devastation it left. Late Sunday night, Kelby Phillips thought Irma had spared his ranch house on St. Simon's.
But the surge started coming in. My dog was looking out the window and she saw something floating by the house. And there was no standing water there half an hour before, so.
They managed to escape across the street to a neighbor's two-story house where they could ride out the flood upstairs. The water reached about 3 feet up the outside of his house. Phillips isn't sure how deep it was inside, but it was above the power outlets in the walls. After peeling up the sodden carpet, some water remains on the floor below.
This stuff right here, this is all the total stuff. This is the stuff that we might be able to salvage. We just don't know. I don't think there's too many things that we could actually say that are usable. Some of the antique wooden items we can salvage because it's all solid wood, but everything that's fabric absorbs ocean water and it's just totaled. So it's tragic, but we're all alive, and that's what matters.
It's much the same on the mainland in Brunswick, where Mike Kennedy estimates the water was 3.5 feet high outside his marshfront home, and even farther up the road, it was still knee deep.
And this house got flooded. This house got flooded. This house got flooded. The trailer up here got flooded.
More than a day later, standing water remains in many of their yards. Kennedy says it's far worse than Hurricane Matthew, which swept up the coast last fall.
We were thinking and we were looking at that it was making a westerly turn and we would only be at a one and it would be a lower, you know, 50-mile-an-hour winds, and we got about 49, and the wind didn't hurt us. The surge is what really, really hurt.
Forecasters always maintained that storm surge was a major risk on the coast, even as Irma's track ticked farther and farther west with each update. But they didn't predict the flooding would reach as far inland as it did. Chuck Watson studies storms for a consulting company called Enke Holdings.
Our models correctly predicted the tides at the Fort Pulaski gauge, but there was a lot more water stored in the marshes.
Watson says researchers learn from every storm, and they'll learn a lot from this one.
I did a simulation this morning, just a slight change to the model of the amount of friction caused by Spartina, the grass that's in the marshes. And it turns out that bumped the numbers for flooding inland by about 15%, almost 20%.
He says adjustments like that will make storm predictions better and better going forward. Folks who got the worst of Irma's flooding have more immediate concerns on their minds, clearing out soaked furniture, preventing mold, filing insurance claims. Despite the devastating flooding of his home, Kelby Phillips on St. Simon's is trying to stay positive.
I just hope that everybody else is going through less than this. And I hope if you're out there, know that everything happens for a reason. And you might not see a good reason for something horrible happening to you, but maybe you'll see it down the road. Because out of everything bad, sometimes something good happens.
For now, though, people on the Georgia coast are just starting to clean up and move forward. For GPB News, I'm Emily Jones.
We'll surely be spending the next weeks and months assessing the damage, as well as asking questions about what could have been done to prevent deaths and devastation. Two more people would lose their lives as a result of the storm. So how well did Georgia do managing Hurricane Irma? I posed that question today to the director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at Columbia University. Jeff Slegamelch said there is no doubt lives were saved by the state's early proactive evacuation orders and mobilization of federal, state, and local resources ahead of the storm. He said no storm preparations are perfect, but planning for what we can't plan is the best we can do. For some, life is getting back to normal. Many, many others are at the beginning of a long, hard road to recovery. And we here at GPB will be there to document their stories. Thank you for listening to Determination After Devastation, Stories from Hurricane Irma from Georgia Public Broadcasting. This special was produced by Stephen Fowler. Additional thanks to Tanya Ott, Bradley George, Maura Curry, Drew Dawson, Emily Curitan, Tom Barclay, and Ellen Reinhart. We have many more stories from the storm at our website, gpbnews.org. I'm Ricky Bevington.